All right, welcome to the Free Stretch Week 1 edition of the show here on Joe Bucks Fan. I am Bobby Fenton. It feels so good to say the words. There is NFL football. In fact, tonight as I record here on Thursday morning, by the time you listen to this, the Thursday night game may have already happened, but we got Chiefs-Ravens tonight. There's that Brazil game on Friday night between the Packers and the Eagles, which should be interesting. And then, of course, the full slate on Sunday, starting at 1 p.m. Sundays at 1 p.m. It's like one of those things that's always been a constant ever since I was a little kid in the fall. Sundays, 1 p.m. The NFL's never messed with their time slots. Like, they've added primetime slots or whatever and maybe tweaked some things, but Sunday at 1, Sunday at 4, and there's nothing like Sunday at 1 p.m. in week 1 when it finally all hits you at once. And maybe you're a red zone person if you have that. You gear up for 7 hours of commercial-free football. But even if you're not, you know, a lot of people, if you're just an interested fan flipping around the games, if you have a fantasy team and you're checking on everybody, 1 p.m. on Sunday is when it all just comes flooding through. And man, it's a nice feeling. It really is for people like me and probably like you too if you're listening to this show. The Bucks will not go on Sunday at 1 p.m. though. They get a later game, which is always nice. Not that it, I mean, in September, a 4:25 start won't be much better, but it'll be a little bit better because the sun's getting lower in the sky and the people on the west side at least will probably have some shade over at Raymond James Stadium if you're going to the game. But 4:25 Sunday, the Washington Commanders come into town. Jaden Daniels, the rookie from LSU, making his first ever NFL start, and it'll be against the Bucs defense that hopes to give him some trouble. Of course, we'll see what the offense has in store now that Baker Mayfield comes in as a returning starter on this team. Remember last year, the opener in Minnesota, which went pretty well, although offensively the Bucs didn't exactly light it up. They got some really good defense and some really timely turnovers, and they won that game. But remembering back to that opener, and we didn't know what to expect from Baker Mayfield. We didn't really know, you know, he was kind of an unknown quantity, even though he'd been with other teams. We hadn't seen him with the Bucs and with their offense, which was then under the guidance of Dave Canales. So at least we got a little bit more of an idea now as a returning starter, albeit another new offensive coordinator with Liam Cohen, of what we'll see there. And there's big expectations for everybody always. Like you ask 32 teams right now where their optimism level is going into week one, probably 28 of them would be like super high. Everybody's excited. Everybody thinks their team has what it takes to at least make a run, even if you don't have a championship team. I don't know if I feel that way about the Bucks or not, but I will say this. I am anticipating a better running game with the addition of Bucky Irving and just schematically, hopefully, a better running game and better offensive line play. The Bucks haven't made a ton of changes, keep in mind. They have changed the offensive coordinator. They have added that second back in Bucky Irving. We'll see how much of a difference he makes. Rashad White, you know, they've added Graham Barton on the offensive line. Nothing crazy, but I anticipate, and it's not hard to go from really, really bad to even just average and feel good about it, and that's all the Bucks would have to do this year. But I'm anticipating improvement there. I'm anticipating Chris Godwin, who I still didn't feel, you know, even when you take time to come back from an injury, even once you're back, you're still not back, and even then, there's still more recovery to happen as you're playing, like active recovery, and I still didn't feel like we were getting the full Chris Godwin, even when he returned from that injury last year. So I'm anticipating more from him, which is going to, in turn, give the offense more, give Mike Evans more opportunities, and I'm always anticipating a lot from Mike Evans. We always are. You know, Jalen McMillan now. We got the rookie out of Washington as the third receiver that everybody's really excited about. I love that catch he made against the Dolphins in the preseason. So, you know, we're anticipating, right? And we're, you know, the Bucs didn't bring in a bunch of new people or anything, but I think they'll be a little bit better offensively. And then defensively, there's anticipation as well, although in my case on defense, like I said before, as we get ready for this week one game, I'm a little bit more, I don't want to say pessimistic, but I'm a little bit more cautious about it rather than excited. And I'm hoping we can generate enough pressure on the passer. I am anticipating, there's that word again, more from Kalijah Kancey coming in now, not a rookie anymore. And I thought last year he showed, I was actually impressed with what he did last year as a rookie, but think we can build on that. Of course, you've got Joe Tryon Shoyenka now, who's got that other starting spot, didn't it wasn't able to beat out Yaya Diaby last year when we still had JPP and Shaq Barrett, not JPP. And so now that Diaby's kind of a mainstay on one side, it's still the other side that's JTS's to see what he can do with. And, you know, if it doesn't happen this year, it's not going to happen. We know how athletic he is. We know about all that stuff. We'll see if he can actually get home. And even if he doesn't get sacks out the wazoo, how much can he disrupt plays, influence plays? Pressures are a good thing, too. All that stuff, we'll have to see. But that's my concern on the edges, not as much on the interior. I think Kancey will be good. Vita Vea is always reliable. Hopefully he can get on the field and stay on the field more instead of just playing half the snaps. But that part I'm a little bit, you know, we'll see. That's the most important part. I mean, it's the most important part. Rushing the passer, you've got to be able to do that, and we'll see what they're able to generate. I'll be watching that very closely against a very mobile but also obviously inexperienced rookie on Sunday. Lavonte David at linebacker has been rock solid every single step of the way. He's never wavered. Bless his heart. He's one of my favorite Buccaneers of all time. He's everybody's one of their favorite Buccaneers of all time. He's not a spring chicken. At what point where there'll be a fall off? I'm a little cautious about that. I'm hoping not yet. He doesn't give any even indication. I mean, by his play, he doesn't look that way. But, you know, when you start hitting a certain age, and it can happen, you know, all of a sudden, not necessarily too drastic, but it can happen when you're like, oh, yep, there's the drop-off. Hoping that doesn't happen this year yet. And then the secondary, I am excited to see Jordan Whitehead back alongside Antoine Winfield. I think the Bucs will be solid back there. At corner, need to see a lot from Zion McCollum, and need to see a lot from that pass rush to help out the corners. The defense is where I think the Bucs season is going to be determined as far as whether they're 11-6 or 10-7 or 9-8 or 8-9 or all the way down to 5-12, because just like last year, I feel like there's a very wide range of records that wouldn't shock me. I don't think they're 5-12, but you know, anywhere from like 6-11 through 11-6, I could see any of those things. And even a really good team, I mean, we say this every single season. There's how good you are, first of all, and that does play into it. But football's a small sample size sport, so luck plays a larger factor, I think, in these things than in other sports. And you've got, you know, the turnovers, fumble luck. How many fumbles do you recover as opposed to somebody else? A lot of times that's completely random. Turnover ratio, all that stuff. You know, red zone. Those things can, and it's one of the reasons football's so fun to watch, because there's so much import on all these little things that happen in every game starting right in week one. But those things went pretty well for the Bucs last year, I thought. Like, I thought they did pretty okay in that department, and still only went 9-8, won the division that, you know, wasn't a very strong one. We'll see how strong it is again this year with Atlanta and New Orleans. I think Carolina's the one everybody's kind of counting out, but the Bucs, Falcons, and Saints, between those three, feel almost interchangeable. Saints are kind of a salary cap situation. They're not in a great spot, and they weren't able to do a lot of the things, haven't been able to do a lot of the things they want to do. Obviously, as Bucs fans, we all hope they're just in cap hell forever. But, you know, looking around the league, you got Atlanta with Kirk Cousins, and pretty much he's the reason everybody's really high on, or not going to say really high, high on them as an NFC South winner, maybe not high on them overall. And, I mean, he's a 500-ish type quarterback, too. Nobody in the division scares anybody else, but we don't scare. I mean, like, they're saying the same thing about us. So I'll say this much about the upcoming season, especially right now, these early parts, these first few weeks. And excuse my language here, but don't get caught up in all the bullshit prediction stuff. That's why I never do predictions on this show. They're pointless. And it doesn't matter how much you know about football, from the biggest expert, the most seasoned ex-player, ex-coach, whoever, all the way down to some analyst, wannabe analyst, all the way down to a podcaster sitting in his kitchen at his house recording the show like I am. Nobody knows, okay? Your level of football knowledge is not correlate to it. Nobody knows, okay? And you'll see a million different things anyway. I saw people saying, the Bucks, they have no chance to make the playoffs. They have a 33% chance or whatever, according to FPI. Then another guy's got the Bucks in the NFC Championship game. And then this one says the Bucks power rating gives them a 47% chance of winning the division. It's all bullshit. And I'm a numbers guy. I am a numbers guy. Even as a numbers guy, though, you cannot parse these things down that way. It's impossible to know. One call, one turnover, one mistake by your guy, one mistake by a guy on the other team, one bounce, one anything, and it changes so much in football, which again is one reason why it's so fun to watch. But don't get caught up in it. Just enjoy the games week by week and see where we are and let it play out and have fun with it, because being a fan, first and foremost, is supposed to be about having fun and entertainment. And you know, don't isolate yourself. If you have buddies you can watch the game with, call them up, have them come over to your house and watch the game. We're going to do it on Sunday. I'm not going to the game Sunday. I'm going to go to a few this year in person. But Sunday, especially with the 4:25 starts, a good time to have some people. I'm not sure if we'll do my house or somebody else's, but have some people over, get in the pool, get some food, just hang out. And that gets harder as you get older. Not to act like I'm lying on the couch and you guys are my shrink, but you know, you get older, you get in your 40s, you have kids, everybody's married. All the buddies you hung out with in your 20s, it's not like I'm not in touch with them, but they all have kids and families too, and you don't hang out as much. We used to just hang out all the time. So these are great reasons to do that, great ways to do that. And so that's one of the things I'm most excited about for football season, is the chance to do things like that and just having football on TV like tonight. Like, it's Thursday morning and I'm sitting here and I literally feel better. I'm just a little happier, a little more energetic, a little more excited about life in general, because I know we got Chiefs-Ravens tonight, and my night's planned. Like, we get the kids home from school, we got baseball practice, whatever, get some homework done, make sure everybody's got dinner, and then at 8 o'clock, it's football, period. And then tomorrow's more. I've said this before, put games anywhere you can. Fridays I'm not crazy about, because I think Fridays belong. We'll talk about this, because the NFL's doing a few different things this year, because there's always more money to be made the more broadcast windows you open up. This Brazil game is not a repeated thing. It's a one-off type thing. But I'm excited about the Friday game. Now we got an NFL game on Friday in Brazil. Okay, whatever. But play on the moon if you want to. It's going to be on TV. And then there's a full slate of college football on Saturday. Obviously, Sunday, more NFL. Monday night football, get us through Monday. Really, Tuesday and Wednesday are the down. Like, this past couple days, yesterday and the day before, I was like, and I'm a baseball fan, but it's not the same, especially when your team's not in it in September. And the Rays games, I mean, I watch them, but it's not, there's not that edge to it. Like, they're not in a race. But either way, like, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, those are the tough days. And those are the days where I'm like, what is life all about? That's like it's like a mini midlife crisis for 2 days a week every week. What are we doing here? Like, what's going on? I gotta get, I need something I'm more passionate about. Maybe I need to make some changes, blah, blah, blah. Thursday hits. Oh, no, everything's fine. Chiefs Ravens tonight. We're good to go. Life is good. Don't need to make any changes. I'm right where I want to be. maybe it's sad, but I'm not complaining. I'm looking forward to it. As far as the league in general, just looking at things to watch for in the NFL, and we saw it a little bit in the preseason, but I am interested to see the kickoffs, because even in preseason, that's not a representative look at what you might get in the regular season. The preseason, everybody, first of all, especially with something new, everybody wants to learn more about it, so they're going to try it every which way they can just to get a feel for what works and what doesn't. I'm still concerned there may be a lot of touchbacks. There were touchbacks in the preseason. I know that Bucks-Dolphins game, there was a few touchbacks. And, I still feel like they need to move the ball back to a spot where it's harder for kickers to get the ball to the end zone. But we'll see how it works now that there's less incentive and the touchbacks moved out to the 30 and all that stuff. It's just something to watch for. Another thing I saw, and people were complaining about this, and it's been talked about before. It's never been a huge issue with me, but people were complaining about it. The NFL this year has announced, again, it's not a major announcement, but it will not use, it's developing this, so it kind of does have it, but they're still working on it. The NFL will not use its electronic system to measure first downs during the regular season this year. After continuing to test it during the preseason, it could be used in the regular season as soon as 2025 at the earliest. And so you see that, And then you hear, you read all these people on social media or on whatever talking head show, and this is a business with a $20 billion annual revenues, blah, blah. They still measure first downs with two sticks and a chain and a couple of old guys like it's 1975. Unbelievable. When you really think about it, first of all, it's not that big of a deal. But second of all, when you really think about, like, streamlining a system, this is any system. In this case, we're talking about measuring the spot of the ball, first downs, all that stuff. But when you want to streamline any system that has multiple components, right, for that system to be truly streamlined and truly efficient, don't all of the components have to have that done to them? Don't all of the components have to be examined and have to be basically evaluated to see if they're running as efficiently as possible? And if they are not, changes have to be made to any of the components, not just one component. So people say, oh, why don't we use an electronic chip in the ball and then lasers to see the mark on the field they need to make? It'd be so easy. I can't believe we're not doing that. Okay, that's getting pretty scientific. I mean, you can get that down to like a tenth of an inch, right? If you really wanted to use that sort of technology. And people can't believe we don't use it in the year 2024. But that's one component, right? What's the other component as far as measuring for a first down? What's one big glaring component no one talks about? I'll give you a second. Spotting the ball, right? If spotting the ball is still an inexact science, which it is, then you can get as precise as you want with the other part of the system, and you're still as random as you were. Without all components of the system being equally calibrated for maximum accuracy, then even if three of the four are calibrated for maximum accuracy, it doesn't matter. The whole thing is still inaccurate. So when I see an official trying to eyeball the exact moment that a runner's body besides his hand or foot touches the ground and calculate where exactly the ball was when that happened, then he runs up with either his left foot or his right foot, and he kind of just puts his foot. And the width of your foot, by the way, is like, what, 4 or 5 inches or something like that, right? So even when you put your foot down, wait, is it the front of your foot, the middle of your foot, the side of your foot? When they spot the ball, that's a completely, completely gray and kind of loose, kind of eyeball, just, okay, we'll see, we'll put it here, put it there. So I'm not complaining about that. I mean, there is no better way to do that. You can't put computer chips in all the players' bodies. You cannot literally freeze the millisecond that anything besides the player's hand or foot touches the ground or goes out of bounds and then isolate exactly where the most forward-facing point of the football was when that happened. You can't do that. Even with the technology we have, you can't do that. So if we're still going to spot the ball using quite a bit of a margin of human error, then are we really doing that much to accomplish anything if we start laser guiding the actual first down line? No. So I don't have a problem with it. Plus, isn't it kind of dramatic? Don't you love when, like, it's close and the chain gang? I don't like stoppages in play in general, but when it's a really crucial moment of the game and the chain gang trots out there and the guy's got the little clip and they reset it on the field and they stretch it and you wait for that stretch. You're trying to guess before they pick up like the bottom of the chain and they lift it up and you're like, okay, he's stretching it. Oh, it looks like he's got it. Just from this, I can tell he's getting, you're guessing whether he's got it or not. I have no problem with that, especially the really close ones. Who was it? Was it Sterator that had the play? He had the actual like playing card, like an ace of spades or something, he would slide it for the really close ones between the nose of the ball and the stick. I know it's inexact. You know it's inexact. But it was already inexact because of where they spotted the ball, which is totally, up for human error. So you're not going to do any better if you get really precise with the laser point of where the stick is if you spotted the ball based on a guy setting his foot on the ground. And I don't even know what part of the foot they use. If it's the inner part of the... Remember, Gene Deckerhoff always says, well, it's going to depend if it's a left-footed spot or a right-footed spot. He says that all the time on the broadcast. He's not wrong. That's what it's like. So, either way, I'm fine with it. I'm looking forward to it. And believe me, the next time... I did the... I told you last week on the show, I did the... the parabolic microphone for the preseason game. So I was literally standing on the sidelines And I was on the Dolphins sideline in the corner there by the pirate ship. It was a really cool experience, like, to be down there. I've been down to the sidelines for games, but, like, closer toward the back wall. And they used to let the media, and they might still do it, but the media can go down there for, like, the final 5 minutes of the half or whatever of the game. But that's not the same. I was literally standing, like, on the white paint this time, like right behind the side judge when there was a play that was even with where I was standing. So I got to observe a lot on the Dolphins sideline, and I could hear Mike McDaniel and Tua talking to each other. I got to hear the pads clacking. And the other thing I got to hear and see was the way the ball boys do their job and the way the chain gang does their job. And, yeah, the chain gang guys, the ball boys were younger. Like, they were in their 30s, a couple in their 20s, athletic guys, guys who can go out there and, you know, make sure everything's running the way it needs to and keep up with the pace of the game. The chain gang guys, and they moved pretty well, but they were up there. They were up there. They seemed like they were in their – I don't know if the Bucs use the same guys. If they're out there listening, I'm not calling you guys out. They did a hell of a job, and they were moving their asses up and down the sideline very well for their age. But, yeah, they were up there a little bit. I'm not going to lie. And that's okay. But it was interesting to see all that stuff. And I don't feel like there's a huge reason to make a change. And even if they do it next year, it'll still be a hollow gesture because you're spotting the ball the same way. And I don't even know if you could do any better spotting the ball. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at bobbygameday. Weather on Sunday, looking ahead to the ball game, it should be, you know, pretty warm. Obviously, there's always the chance of afternoon showers this time of year. It's still, I don't think it'll be nearly as bad as a 1 o'clock game would have been as far as the heat. But yeah, the rain chances do go up a little bit when you play later in the day. Injury-wise, as far as I'm doing this show on Thursday, but before the practice report for Thursday comes out, as of Wednesday, Logan Hall didn't practice with a foot injury. Todd Bowles indicated that one may take all week to figure out, and it might be a game day decision. Of course, if he doesn't go, Vernon Golston would probably get a lot of those snaps. Ernest Brown, although he was limited in practice, he'll be ready to go Sunday. He could see more action as well. Then the other one was Chase McLaughlin, the kicker, who is dealing, he's listed as abdominal slash illness. So I don't know if he's got a stomach bug or what. And, you know, obviously he has been rock solid for the Bucs. You could always get a guy for one game if you needed to. But I think, I mean, this is just me saying this. I'm not playing doctor. But with a few days, that sounds like the type of thing that hopefully could be okay. Otherwise, as you would expect for the first game coming off of 2 weeks off before the last preseason game, everybody's pretty healthy for both teams. And so that's the extent of it. Bucs will be in all white. They put that out there on Twitter. I won't try to bore you guys with uni takes all year long, but I'm a huge uniform guy. And I've said before, I'll say it again. I have a problem with the Bucs wearing white pants. I don't think they even need to exist. I get wearing white jerseys at home because, you know, the team at home usually wears their darks and the road team wears the whites. And I get in the heat, the Bucs wearing, and they've always done that, even back to their old days in the orange uniforms. They wore white at home quite a bit of the time and put the other team in their dark uniforms. Makes perfect sense. But the Buccaneers should always, no matter what jersey they're wearing, always have pewter pants on. The white pants are like a preseason look. It almost looks like practice pants. And I don't mind white pants in general on other teams. I'm just talking about for the Bucs. It's one of the best looks in football. Pewter helmet, white jersey, pewter pants. That should be their base white uniform. Whenever they wear white jerseys, that's the uniform. And when they wear red jerseys, pewter helmet, red jerseys, pewter pants. That, if it was up to me, they'd be like the Packers or the Chiefs or the Raiders or these teams that are, you know, you, home is this and road is that and that's it. I don't like mixing and matching all these combinations. I get annoyed by fans who have ADHD who are like, oh, that's the same. Let's mix it up. Let's come up with a black uniform, dude. You know, those idiots. Home and road. I wouldn't. So I don't think the all white's necessary. Although I get the white jerseys, but it'll put the Commanders in whatever monstrosities they wear now that they got rid of some of the best uniforms in football. Could the Commanders not have just? I mean, I get changing the name from Redskins, fine, but all they had to do was. I mean, the Redskins old. I hate even saying old because it shouldn't be, but they're old now because they don't use them anymore. The Redskins' old uniforms, especially the burgundy pants, the white jerseys, and the burgundy helmet, those were iconic. Those were more than just good. Those were iconic. Could they not have just peeled that logo off the side of the helmet, put the new one on with the W, and done nothing else. Like, it's just such a crime against good taste what some of these teams do now. But anyway, I'm not going to go on a whole harangue about it. They'll be wearing their maroon, whatever the hell it is now, that Nike completely made a mockery of. So look for that on Sunday at 4:25. If you want a fridge schedule, I still have the fridge schedules. I've emailed a bunch of them out. It looks great. I've got it on my fridge right now. It looks gorgeous. In fact, I'll post a picture and put it up on Twitter so you get an idea of what you're getting. But I do a fridge schedule every year where I type it up, put the logos on there in color. It looks really good. I used to just cut it out of the newspaper, but now I do that. It goes back to my grandmother doing that when I was growing up with all the football teams she followed. And so I'll email it to you. If you email me, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at @BobbyGameDay. And if you check that, give me a follow or check it. I will post a picture of my fridge schedule so you know what you're getting if you email me. I'll just send you the file and you can print it yourself. Color print recommended, as always, so you can let those logos really pop and really shine. And otherwise, folks, we're there, man. I mean, we finally did it. Week one is in the books. We had the first week of college football last weekend that spanned all the way from Thursday to Monday. Now we're back into the more traditional rhythm where you'll have college on Saturday and some on Friday, although we've got NFL on Friday as well. And then NFL on Sunday, the full complement both ways. Like I said, you basically get 5 days a week straight, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, where you've got something going that night if you're a football fan. And on Fridays, I encourage you to watch high school football as well. Like, go to your local high school game wherever you live. There's always a high school game going on not far. It's a great place to take kids who want to get up close and see things and a great way to set things up. And the Friday night game, I believe, isn't that only on Peacock or something like that where it's not on regular TV, the Brazil game? And I'm not into all this streaming BS. I'm a cable guy through and through. I'll put it on my laptop. You know, I'll bootleg it or something like that if I really want to get a look. But we did it, folks. We're here. And I want to thank each and every one of you, as always, for listening to the show. I want to thank the Joes for giving me this platform, the single best place for Bucks coverage anywhere, whether that's internet, TV, radio. It's one-stop, all-encompassing, updated multiple times a day, joebucksfan.com. Thanks to them for giving me that platform, and thanks to you for listening. I'm Bobby Fenton. That's your week one edition of the Free Stretch. We'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a 1-0 football team. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Get together with friends, have fun, meet up, get some food, and enjoy the game. Whatever you do, though, be safe, and wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.